Chapter 16. Collision. The choice. Forgiveness. A bombardment had begun, and the people of Dagonet's capital feared it was the end of the world. They knew so little of the reality of things, however. High above in orbit, it was only the warship Thanato that fired on the city, and even then it was not with the vessel's most powerful cannons. The people did not know that a fleet of craft were poised in silence around their sister ship, watchful and waiting. Had all the vessels of the War Master's flotilla unleashed their kill power, then indeed those fears would have come true. The planet's crust cracked, the continents sliced open. Perhaps those things would happen soon enough. But for now, it was sufficient for the Thanato to hurl inert kinetic kill rods down through the atmosphere, the sky-splitting shriek of their passage climaxed by a lowing thunder as the warshots obliterated power stations, military compounds, and the vast mansion houses of the noble clans. From the ground, it seemed like wanton destruction. From orbit, it was a shrewd and surgical pattern of attack. Coin and the Garantine stayed off the main avenues and boulevards, avoiding the roadways where processions of frightened citizens streamed towards the city limits. Hours had passed now since the killing in the plaza, and the people had lost the will to run, numbed by their own terror. Now they stumbled, silently for the most part, some pushing carts piled high with whatever they could loot or carry, others clinging to overloaded ground vehicles. When people did speak, they did so in whispers, as if they were afraid the Adeptus Astartes would hear the sound of a voice at normal pitch from across the city. Listening from the shadows of an alleyway across from a shuttered monorail halt, the Calidus heard people talking about the Sons of Horus. Some said they had set up a staging point in Liberation Plaza, that there were hordes of stormbirds parked there, disgorging more Astartes with each passing moment. Others mentioned seeing armored vehicles in the streets, even battle titans and monstrous war creatures. The only truth Coin could determine from what he gleaned was that the Sons of Horus were intent on fulfilling the orders of Devrim Korda to the fullest. Dagonet City would be little more than a smouldering funeral pyre by nightfall. The assassin looked up to where a massive street screen hung at a canted angle from the front of the station building. The display was cracked and fizzing with patchy static, text declaring that the Metropolitan Rail Network was temporarily suspended was still visible, the pixels frozen in place. Coin eyed the device warily. The public screens all had arrays of vidpictors arranged around them, connected to the municipal monitoring network. The Calidus had a spy's healthy disdain for being caught on camera. As if it had sensed the Shade's train of thought, Coin saw very clearly as one of the pictors jerked on its gimbal, stuttering around to face the line of refugees. The assassin retreated back into the shadows, unsure if the monitor had caught sight. A few meters down the alley, the Garantine was sitting atop a waste container, shivering with the comedown from his reflex boosters, working with a field kit to close up the various wounds the Son of Horus had inflicted on him during the earlier melee. Coin grimaced at the chewing sound of a dermal stapler as it knitted flesh back to flesh. The Garantine looked up. His mask was off, and one of his eyes was torn and damaged, weeping clear fluids. He grinned, showing blood-stained teeth.
"Be with you in a trice, freak."
Coin ignored the insult, shrugging off the ragged remains of the PDF troop commander tunic and replacing it with a brocade jacket stolen from a fallen shop window dummy.
"May not have that long."
The Calidus shrank back against the wall and let the face of the portly PDF officer slip away. It was painful to make a change like this without proper meditation and time spent, but the circumstances demanded it. Coin's aspect flowed to resemble that of a young man, a boyish face under the same unruly mop of thin hair.
"Do you remember what you used to look like?"
said the Eversaw, disgust thick in his tone. Coyne gave the other assassin a sideways look, making a point of gazing at the topography of scarification and the countless implants both atop and beneath his epidermis.
Do you?
The Garantine chuckled.
We're both so pretty in our own ways.
He went back to his wounds.
Any sign of more Astartes?
The Calidus made a negative noise. But they'll be coming. I've seen this kind of thing before. They march through a city, putting the torch to everything they pass, daring anyone to stop them.
Let them come,
he grunted, tying the last field dressing around his thick thigh. There will be more than one next time.
Don't doubt it.
The Eversaw's hands were still twitching.
The poisoner girl was right. We're all going to die here.
That drew a harsh look from the Calidus. I have no intention of ending my life on this backwater world. He chuckled.
Act like you have a choice.
The Garantine made a metronome motion with his fingers.
Ticky-tocky. Odds are against us. Someone must have talked.
That made the other assassin fall silent. Coyne had not wanted to dwell on the possibility, but the Garantine was right to suspect that their mission had been compromised. It seemed a logical deduction, given what had happened in the plaza. The sharp cry of an animal drew Coyne's attention away from such troubling thoughts, and the assassin looked up to see a raptor bird flutter past the end of the alleyway, pivoting on a wing to glide in their direction. There was a flurry of movement, and the Eversaw had his executor aimed upward, the sensor mast of his sentinel gear drawing a bead. The combi weapon's needler made a snapping sound, and the bird died in mid-turn, falling to the ground like a stone. Coyne went to the animal's body. There had been something odd about it, a flicker of sunlight off metal.
Hungry, are you?
The Garantine lurched along behind, limping slightly.
Idiot.
Coyne held up the bird's corpse. A single needle dart bisected its bloody torso. The raptor had numerous augmetic implants in its skull and pinions.
This is a cyber eagle. It belongs to the infocyte. He's looking for us.
Coyne glanced up at the street screen once more and the images beneath it.
Maybe it was him who talked,
muttered the Eversaw.
Maybe you.
The image on the street screen flickered and changed. Now it was an aerial view of the street, then shots of the alleyway, then a confused tumble of motion. Coyne suddenly understood the display was showing a replay of the visual feed from the eagle's autosenses. Some of the refugee stragglers saw the same thing and stopped to watch the loop of footage. Coyne tossed the dead bird aside and stepped out into the street. Immediately, all the images along the bottom of the street screen whirred, moving to capture a look at the Calidus. For a moment, nothing happened. If Coyne was right, if it was Tariel watching through those lenses, the Vanus would be confused. Coyne's face was different from the last one the infocyte had seen. But then, the Garantine shuffled out into the open, and all doubt was removed. The refugees saw the hulking rage killer and backed away in fear, as if suddenly becoming aware of a wild animal in their midst. In that, Coyne reflected, they were almost correct. The Garantine leered at them, showing his teeth. A hooter sounded from the monorail halt, and in juddering fits and starts, the heavy metal gate closing off the station from the street began to draw open on automated mechanisms. The screen above flickered again, and this time the text displayed there announced that the rail system was now in operation. Coyne smiled slightly.
I think we have some transport.
The Calidus took a step, but a clawed hand grabbed the assassin's arm.
Could be a trap,
hissed the Garantine. In the distance, another orbital strike screamed into the earth and sent a tremor through the ground beneath their feet.
Only one way to find out.
On the elevated platform above the street level, a single train was active. The web of monorail lines had been inert ever since the start of the insurrection against Terra, first shut down by the Klanner troops as a way of imposing order by restricting the movement of the commoners through the city, and later forced to stay idle because of the mass breakout at the terminus. But some lines were still connected to what remained of the capital's rapidly dying power grid, and the autonomic control systems that governed the operation of the trains and lines and points were simplistic devices. They were no match for someone with the skills of a Vanus. Another Cyper Eagle roosted on the prow of the train, and it called out a strident caw as Coin and the Garantine sprinted onto the platform. The Calidus threw a glance down the wide stairwell. Some of the bolder refugees were venturing inside the station after them. Quickly! Coin found an open carriage door and climbed inside. The train was a cargo carrier, partitioned off inside by pens suitable for livestock. The air within was thick with the stink of animal sweat and feces. As the Garantine climbed in, the Eagle took wing, and the train shunted forwards with a grinding clatter, sending sparks flying from the drive wheels gripping the rail. Ozone crackled, and the carriages lurched away from the station, picking up momentum. The train rattled along, a dull impact resonating off the metalwork as it shouldered a piece of fallen masonry off the rails. Coin drew the neural shredder and moved back through the cargo wagon, kicking open the hatch to the next carriage, and then the two more beyond that. In the rear car, the shade found the corpses of Groxes, the bovines lying where they had fallen on the gridded metal flooring. They were still tethered to anchoring rings on the walls, doubtless forgotten and left to starve in this reeking metal box after the fighting had begun. Satisfied they were alone, the Calidus walked back the length of the train to find the Garantine in the stubby engine car, watching the chattering cogitator driver. Through the broken glass of the engine compartment canopy, the elevated track was visible ahead, dropping away down to the level of one of the main boulevards, paralleling the radial highway's course. "If we're lucky, we can ride this heap all the way out of the city," said Coin, absently examining the charge glyph on the neural weapon. The Eversaur had his fang mask back on, and he was growling softly with each breath, peering into the distance like a predator smelling the wind.
"We're not lucky," he retorted. "Do you see?"
The Garantine pointed a metal-taloned finger ahead of the train. Coin pulled a pair of compact magnoculars from a belt clip and peered through them. A fuzzy image swam into focus. Grey blobs became the distinct shapes of Adeptus Astartes in Maximus pattern armor, moving to block the path of the monorail. As the Calidus watched, they dragged the husks of burned-out vehicles across the line, assembling a makeshift barricade.
"I told you this was a trap," rumbled the Garantine. "The Vanus is delivering us to the Astartes."
Coin gave a shake of the head. "If that was so, then why aren't we slowing down?" If anything, the train's velocity was increasing, and warning indicators began to blink on the cogitator panel as the carriages exceeded their safety limits. The wheels screeched as the train raced down the incline from the elevated rails to the ground-level crossing, and metal flashed off metal as the Sons of Horus began to open fire on the leading carriage, pacing bolt shells into the hull from the cover of their obstruction. The Garantine blind-fired a burst of full auto-fire through the broken window, and then followed Coin back through the wagons at a sprint. Shots punched through the walls of the cargo cars, rods of sunlight stabbing through the impact holes into the musty interior. The decking rocked beneath their feet, and it was hard to stay upright as the train continued to gather speed. They made it to the rearmost wagon as the engine car slammed into the barricade and crashed through it. The husks of a ground car and a flatbed GEV spun away across the boulevard, throwing two Astartes aside with the force of the collision. Metal fractured, red-hot and stressed beyond its limits, and the guide wheels broke away from the axle. Instantly freed from the monorail, the train lurched up and twisted over onto its side. The carriages crashed down to the blacktop and scored a gouge down the length of the street, spitting cascades of asphalt and gravel. In the rear car, the assassins were thrown into the Grox carcasses, the impact absorbed by the fetid meat of the dead animals. Screeching and vomiting clouds of bright orange sparks, the derailed cargo train finally slowed to a shuddering halt. Coyne lost awareness for what seemed like long, long minutes. Then the Calidus was aware of being dragged upwards and then propelled through a tear in what had once been the wagon's roof. The Shade took several shaky steps out onto the roadway, smelling hot tar and the tang of burned metal. Coyne blinked in the sunlight, feeling for the neural shredder. The weapon was still there, mercifully. The Garantine lurched past, reloading his executor.
"I think we upset them," he shouted,
pointing past Coyne's shoulder. Turning, the assassin saw armored giants running down the road towards them, firing from the hip. Bolt rounds cracked into the ground and the shattered train with heavy blares of concussion. Coyne drew the neural weapon and hesitated. The pistol had a finite range and was better suited to a close-in kill. Instead, the Calidus retreated behind part of the cargo wagon. Perhaps a lucky shot might take down one of the Sons of Horus, even hobble two of them. But that was a tactical squad back there, bearing down on the pair of them.
"We're not lucky," the assassin muttered, considering the possibility that this backwater would indeed be the place that claimed the life of Coyne of the Calidus.
A ricochet careened off the roadway, and the Garantine staggered back into cover. Coyne smelled the thick, resinous odour of biofluids. There was a deep purple-black gouge in the Eversaur's back.
"You're wounded."
"Am I? Oh."
The other assassin seemed distracted, clearing a fouled cartridge from the breech of his gun. A metal canister rattled off the wagon and landed near their feet. Without hesitation, the Garantine scooped up the crack grenade and threw it back in the direction it had come. Coyne could see that his every movement was an effort, as more thick, chemical-laced blood seeped from the injury. The Eversaur let out a low, ululating gasp as injectors discharged, nullifying his pain. He glared back at Coyne, and his pupils were pinpricks.
"Something's coming. Hear it?"
Coyne was about to speak, but a sudden roar of jet wash smothered every other noise. From between the towers lining one of the side streets came a blunt, proud flyer, the boxy fuselage suspended between two sets of wings that ended in vertical thruster pods. It was painted in bright stripes of white and green, the livery of the city's firefighting brigade. There was a man in a black stealth suit and an open hatch, a long rifle in his grip. A shot snapped from the gun muzzle, and further down the road a car exploded. Coyne pulled at the Garantine's arm as the aircraft dropped towards the street.
"Time to go!"
the Calidus shouted. The Eversaur's muscles were bunched hard, like bales of steel cable, and he was vibrating with wild energy.
"He said he killed one of them before."
The Garantine was glaring at the oncoming Astartes.
"That's two now, if he's to be believed."
The flyer was spinning about, trying to find a place to settle, as the Sons of Horus split their fire between the assassins and the aircraft.
"Garantine," said Coyne. "We have to move."
The rage killer twitched, and a palsy came over him.
"I don't like you," he said, slurring the words. "You realize that?"
"The feeling is mutual."
Coyne had to yell to be heard over the noise of the thrusters. The flyer was hovering less than a meter from the roadway. Tariel was at the canopy, beckoning frantically.
"Good. I don't want you to confuse my motives."
And then the Eversaur surged into a loping run, his legs blurring as he hurtled out of cover and straight into the lines of the Astartes. Shell casings cascaded out behind him in a stream of brass, falling from the ejection port of his combi weapon. The Calidus swore and sprinted in the opposite direction towards the flyer. Kell was in half cover by the open hatch, the Exitus rifle bucking in his grip as he fired turbo-penetrator rounds into the enemy squad. Coyne leapt up and scrambled into the crew compartment of the aircraft. Tariel was cowering behind a panel, pale and sweaty. He appeared to be puppeting the aircraft's pilot servitor through the interface of his cogitator gauntlet. The Infocyte looked up,
Where's the Garantine?
He yelled.
He's made his choice,
said Coyne, slumping to the deck. The Eversaw ran, screaming into the cluster of rebel Astartes, blasting the first he found off his feet with a screeching salvo of rounds from the Executor. He collided with the next, and the two of them went down in a crash of ceramite and metal. The Garantine felt the boiling churn of energy racing through his veins, his mech-enhanced heart beating at such incredible speed the sound it made in his ears was one long, continuous roar. The stim pods in the cavities of his abdomen broke their regulator settings and flooded him with doses of Psycon and Barrage pumped directly into his organs, while atomizer grills in the frame of his fang mask puffed raw, undiluted anger inducers and neuro-triggers into his nostrils. He rode on a wave of frenzy, of black and mad hate, that sent him howling with uncontrollable laughter, each choking snarl rattling like gunshots. He was so fast, so lethal, so satisfied like this. The Garantine had been awake now for the longest period of his life since before they had found him in the colony. The gnawed bones of his neighbours in his little child's hand, the tips sharpened to make a kill with. He missed the dreamy no-mind bliss of the stasis cowls. He felt lost without the whispering voices of the hypnagoges. This kind of living, the hour-to-hour, day-by-day existence that the rest of them found so easy, it was a hell of stultifying torpor for the Garantine. He hated the idea of this interminable yesterday and today and tomorrow. He craved the now. Every second he was awake, he felt as if the pure rage that fueled him was being siphoned away, making him weak and soft. He needed his sleep, needed it like air. But he needed his kills even more. Better than the hardest hit of combat filter, more potent than the jags of pleasure analogue that issued from the lobo chips in his grey matter, the kills were the best high of them all. He was pounding on the Space Marine's helmet, smashing in the eye lenses, beating his clawed hands bloody. The Executor was a club he used to bludgeon and swipe. Impacts registered on him, blasts of infernal heat throwing him off his victim, driving him hard into the road. Heavy, drug-tainted vitae frothed at his mouth and bubbled through the maw of the fang mask. He felt no pain. There was only a white ball of warmth in the middle of him, and it was growing. It expanded to fill the Garantine with a rush the like of which he had never felt before. The implants in him stuttered and died, shattered by glancing bolter hits and knife stabs. He had nothing but rags below the right knee. Every muscle in his body shuddered as the death sign triggered a dormant artificial gland beneath his sternum. The engorged orb-shaped organ spent its venom load, bursting as the end came close. The terminus gland poured a compound into the Garantine that made the blood in his veins boil, turning it to acid. Every drug and chemical mixed uncontrollably, becoming potent, toxic, explosive. The soft tissues of the Eversaw's eyes cooked in their orbits, and so he was blind to the final flash of exothermic release, as his body was consumed in an inferno of spontaneous combustion. They hugged the contours of the city streets, moving fast and as low as they dared. But out on the edge of the capital, the Sons of Horus had little presence. Instead, the rebel Astartes had allowed their orbital contingent to hammer at the walled estates and parklands belonging to the noble clans. The city was now ringed with a dirty chain of massive impact craters. The blackened bowls of churned earth were fused into glassy puddles in some places, where the force of the kinetic strikes had melted the ground into distended fulgurite plates. The lines of refugees crossed the craters beneath them, streamers of people moving like ants across the footprint of an uncaring giant. The thick, smoke-soiled air over the destruction veiled the passage of the flyer. Tariel told them they were fortunate that the Adeptus Astartes had not deployed air cover. In this wallowing, keening civilian aircraft, they would have been no match for a Raven interceptor. On Kell's orders, the Infocyte directed the flyer out over the wastelands, beyond the city walls, and into the dusty churn of the deserts. With each passing second, they were putting more and more distance between them and the starport hangar where the Ultio had been concealed. Nothing followed them. At one point, the sensors registered something small and fast, a jet bike, perhaps, but it was far off their vector and did not appear to be aware of them. Finally, Coyne broke the silence.
"Where in the name of Hades are we going?"
"To find the others," said the Vindicare.
"The women."
Coyne was still hiding behind a young man's face, and the expression the Calidus put on it was too old and too callous for such a youthful visage.
"What makes you think they're any less dead than the Eversaw?"
Kell held up a data slate.
"You don't really think I'd let the Culexus out of my sight without knowing exactly where she was, do you?
A tracking device."
Coyne immediately glared at Tariel, who shrank back behind the hologram of the flyer's autopilot control.
"One of your little toys?"
The Infocyte gave a brisk nod.
"A harmless radiation frequency tag, nothing more. I provided enough for all of us."
Coyne turned the glare back on Kell.
"Did you plant one on me as well?"
The boy's eyes narrowed.
"Where is it?"
Kell smiled coldly.
"Those rations aboard the Ultio were tasty, weren't they?"
Before the Calidus could react, he went on,
"Don't be so difficult, Coyne. If I hadn't factored in a contingency, we never would have found you. You'd still be in the city, marking time, until Horus's warriors cut you down."
"You thought of everything," said the Shade,
"except the possibility that our targets would know we were coming."
Tariel began to speak.
"The target in the plaza
was not the War Master," snarled Coyne.
"I am an assassin palatine of more kills than I care to mention, and I have survived every sanction and prosecuted each kill because I had no secrets. No one to confide in. No chance for a breach in operational security. And yet here we are, with this grand and foolish scheme to murder a Primarch crashing down around us, and for what? Who spoke, Kell?"
The Calidus crossed the flyer's small cabin and prodded the marksman in the chest.
"Who is to blame?"
"I don't have an answer for you," said Kell, in a moment of candor. "But if any of us were traitors to the Emperor, we've had opportunities aplenty to stop this endeavor before it even left the Sol system."
"Then how did Horus foresee the attack?" asked Coyne.
"He let one of his own commanders perish in his stead. He must have known. Are we to believe he's some kind of sorcerer?"
A chime sounded from Kell's data slate, and he left the question unanswered.
"A return. 2 kilometers to the west."
Tariel opened another pane of ghostly hololithic images and nodded.
"I have it. A static location. The flyer's Auspex is detecting a metallic mass. Conflicting thermal reads."
"Set us down."
Below them, dust clouds whirled past, reducing visibility to almost nothing.
"The sandstorm and the contaminants from the orbital bombing."
The Vanus looked up, and his argument died on his lips as he saw Kell's rigid expression. He sighed.
"As you wish."
2 of Tariel's Irats found her, slumped over the yoke of a GEV skimmer half buried under a storm-blown dune. From what the Infocyte could determine, she had been injured before getting into the vehicle, and at some point, as she tried to escape into the deep desert, her wounds had overcome her, and the skimmer controls had slipped from her grip. Kell, an expression of stony fury on his face, shoved Tariel out of the way and gathered up Somme, where she lay. Her face was discolored with bruising, and to the Infocyte's amazement, she still lived. Coyne drew something from the back seat of the GEV, a sculpted silver helmet in the shape of a skull, crested with lenses and antennae of arcane design. When the Calidus held it up to look it in the eye, black ash fell from the neck and was carried away on the moaning winds.
"Iota."
"Dead."
Solm stirred at the mention of the Psyker's name.
"It killed her."
Her voice was slight, thick with pain.
"It,"
echoed Tariel. But Kell was already carrying the venenum back towards the flyer. Coyne was the last inside, and the Calidus drew the hatch shut with a slam. The shade brought Iota's helmet back and sat it on the deck of the cabin. It fixed them all with its mute, accusatory gaze. Outside, the winds threw rattling curls of sand across the canopy, plucking at the wings of the aircraft. Across the compartment, Kell tore open a Medicaid pack and emptied the contents across the metal floor. He worked to load an injector with a pan-spectrum anti-infective.
"Ask her what happened," said Coyne.
"Shut up,"
Kell snapped.
"I'm going to save her life, not interrogate her."
"If she was drawn away on purpose," continued the Calidus, "if it was deliberate that Solm was attacked and Iota killed..."
"What could have killed her?"
Tariel blurted out.
"I witnessed what she was capable of in the Red Lanes."
Coyne scrambled across the cabin towards the sniper.
"For the throne's sake, man, ask her. Whatever she is to you, we have to know."
Kell hesitated, and then, with deliberate care, he replaced the anti-infective agent with a stimulant.
"You're right."
"That could kill her,"
Tariel warned.
"She's very weak."
"No,"
Kell replied, placing the nozzle of the injector at her pale neck.
"She's not."
He pressed the stud, and the drug load discharged. Solm reacted with a hollow gasp, her back arching, eyes opening wide with shock. In the next moment, she fell back against the deck, wheezing.
"You..."
she managed, her gaze finding Kell where he stood over her.
"Listen to me,"
said the Vindicare, that curious, unquantifiable expression on his face once again.
"The Garantine is dead. The mission was a failure. Horus sent a proxy in his place. Now his Astartes are punishing the city for what we have done."
Solm's eyes lost focus for a moment as she took this in.
"A killer,"
she whispered.
"An assassin. Hiding behind the identity of a rogue trader's agent."
She looked up.
"I saw what it did to Iota. The others it just murdered, but her. And then the blood."
The woman started to weep.
"Oh, God, Emperor, the blood."
"What did she just say?"
Coyne asked.
"Idolatry is outlawed. All of the..."
"Be quiet,"
Tariel snapped. The infocyte leaned forward.
"Solm, there is another assassin here. It killed Iota, yes?"
She gave a shaky nod.
"Tried to end me. Murdered Sinope and the others in the sanctuary. And then the book."
She sobbed. Kell extended a hand and laid it on her shoulder as she wept.
"I can show it,"
said Tariel. Coyne turned to see the Vanus grasping Iota's helmet in his hands.
"What happened, I mean? There's a memory coil built into the mechanism of the Animus Speculum, a mission recorder."
"Do it," said Kell without looking up.
In short order, Tariel used his mechadendrites to prise open panels along the back of the metal skull and connected cords of bright brass and copper between the hidden ports on the device and the hololith projector built into his cogitator. Images flickered and jumped. Fractured moments of conversation blurred and sputtered in the air as the infocyte plumbed the depths of the memory unit, cutting through layers of encryption. And then it began. Solm looked away. She did not want to witness it a second time. Tariel watched Iota die through her own eyes. He saw the man in the Eurotas uniform transform into the thing that called itself Spear. He saw the perplexing readouts on the aura scans that matched nothing the Psyker had encountered before, and he saw the horrific act of the taking of her blood.
"It tasted her,"
Solm muttered.
"Do you see? In the moment before the kill?"
"Why?"
Coyne was sickened.
"A genetic lock,"
Tariel said, nodding to himself.
"Powerful psionic rituals require the use of an organic component as an initiator."
"A blood rite?"
Coyne shot him a look.
"It's primitive superstition."
"It might appear so to a certain point of view."
Iota died again. The audio replay catching the raw terror in her death scream, and Tariel looked away, his gorge rising. The peculiar waif-like Psyker had not deserved to perish in so monstrous a way as this. No one spoke for a long time after the playback ended. They sat in silence, the images of the demonic abomination embedded in their thoughts, the revolting spectacle of the girl's murder echoing in the howling winds outside.
"Sorcery," said Kell at length.
His voice was cold and hard.
"The rumors about Horus's sinister plans are true. He is in league with allies from beyond the Pale."
"The ruinous powers,"
muttered Solm.
"It is not magic," Tariel insisted. "Call it what it is. Science. But the darkest science. Like Iota herself, a creation of intellects unfettered by morals or boundaries."
"What do you say? That this witchling spear is like her?" Coyne's eyes narrowed. "The girl was something bred in a laboratory, deliberately tainted by the touch of the warp."
"I know what it... what he is," said Tariel, yanking out the cables from the gauntlet and dowsing the hologram's deathly images. "I have heard the name of this creature."
"Explain," demanded Kell.
"This must never be repeated," the Infocyte sighed. "The Vanus watch all. Our stacks are filled with information on all the clades. It is how we maintain our position."
Coyne nodded.
"You blackmail everyone."
"Indeed. We know that the Culexus seek to improve upon their psychic abilities through experimentation. They gather subjects from the care of the Silent Sisterhood. Those they do not induct into their ranks, they spirit away for other reasons."
"This spear was one of ours?"
Coyne was incredulous.
"It is possible," Tariel went on. "There was a project. It was declared null by Sire Culexus himself. They called it the Black Pariah. A living weapon capable of turning a target's psionic force back upon it without the aid of an animus device. The ultimate counter-psyker."
"What became of it?" said Kell.
"That data is not available. The starship the Culexus used as their base of operations was to be piloted into a sun. So the orders said. I know this because my mentor was tasked with gathering this intelligence."
"And this spear is the Black Pariah?"
Kell frowned.
"Not dead, but in service to the War Master?"
He shook his head.
"What have we been thrown into?"
"But why is it here on Dagonet?" insisted Coyne. "To destroy Iota? To disrupt our plan against Horus?"
Solm gave a shuddering breath.
"Iota was just in the way, like all the pilgrims and the refugees. Collateral damage. Spear wanted the book. The blood."
"What are you talking about?"
Kell took her arm and pulled her around.
"Jenica, what do you mean?"
She told them. And as he understood, Tariel went weak and slumped against the side of the hull, shaking his head. His mouth silently formed the words, "No, no, no," over and over again. Coyne snorted.
"The Emperor's blood? That cannot be. This is madness. Horus's assassin tears a page from some ancient tome, and with that he can strike at the most powerful human being who ever lived? The very idea is ridiculous."
"He has what he wants now," Solm went on. "Synchrony with the God Emperor's gene marker. Spear is like a primed bomb ready to detonate."
She blinked back tears.
"We have to stop him before he leaves the planet."
"Well, you saw what Spear did to Iota."
Kell looked towards the Calidus.
"If this thing is a mirror for psychic might, can you imagine what would happen if he got through to Terra? If he came close enough to turn that power on the Emperor?"
"A cataclysm?"
husked Tariel.
"The same thing that happened to Iota, but multiplied a million times over. A collision of the most lethal psychic forces conceivable."
The Infocyte swallowed hard.
"Throne's sake! He might even kill him."
Coyne gave a sarcastic snort.
"The Emperor of Mankind wounded by something so fantastic? So ephemeral? I can't believe it is possible. Spear will be swatted away like an insect. This woman's reason cannot be trusted. Her kind are governed by archaic spiritual fanaticism, not facts."
"The God Emperor alone guides me," she insisted.
The Calidus stabbed a finger at the poisoner.
"You see, she admits it. She is part of a cult forbidden by the Council of Terra."
Before anyone else could respond, the Shade went on.
"We have a mission here, a target. Horus may have sent his captain Sedere to his death by design, or we may have tipped our hands by moving too soon, but it does not matter. The end result remains the same. Our mission is not yet ended.
He will come down to Dagonet, said Tariel. The Warmaster has no choice now. The punishment of this world must be seen to come from his hand.
Exactly, insisted Coyne. We have another chance to kill him. The only chance. A moment like this will never come again.
Solm painfully pushed herself to her feet.
You understand nothing about me, Shapechanger.
Or what I believe,
she snarled.
His divinity is absolute, and you delude yourself by your denial of it. Only he can save humanity from the darkness that gathers around us. We cannot fail him.
She lurched and fell against Kel, who caught her before she could stumble to the deck.
I cannot fail him. Not again.
Tariel spoke up.
If Solm is right, if this is the Black Pariah, and he has ingested a measure of Imperial blood, Spear will seek to flee this world and make space to Terra as quickly as possible. And if he has a ship that can get him to the warp, or worse, if Horus's fleet is waiting for the assassin to come to them, there will be no way to stop him. Spear must be killed before he leaves Dagonet.
Or we can trust in the Emperor and follow our orders,
Coyne broke in.
You think him divine, Solm. I may not agree, but I do believe he is strong enough to shrug off any attack. I believe that he will see this spear coming and strike him from the sky.
The Calidus's boy face twisted. But Horus, the Warmaster is a serpent, rising for just one moment from his hiding place. We kill him here, on this world, and we end the threat he represents forever.
Would it be that simple?
Solm snapped back.
A city full of people is being put to the sword out there because we killed a single Astartes. Do you think if the Warmaster dies, every rebel will fall to his knees and be crippled by grief? It will be anarchy, destruction and chaos.
I am Mission Commander.
Kel's voice cut through the air.
I have authority here.
He glared at Solm.
I will not be disobeyed again. The decision is mine alone.
We can't kill them both, said Tariel.
Get us airborne,
said the Vindicare, reaching for his rifle. There was a ragged group of men on the perimeter wall of the starport, some of them soldiers, some of them not, all with looted firearms and the aura of hot fear about them. They saw the jet bike hurtling in from across the desert, and they fired on it without hesitation. Everything had been trying to kill them since the shock of the dawn broke, and they did not wait to find out if this vehicle was friend or foe. Insanity and terror ruled Dagonet now, as men turned on men in their panic to flee the doomed city. The stubby Aerodyne had a single medium-wattage las cannon mounted along the line of the fuselage, and Spear aimed it with twists of the jetbike's steering handles, lashing along the battlement of the wall with lances of yellow fire. Bodies exploded in blasts of superheated blood steam, as shots meant to knock down aircraft eradicated men with each hit. Those who didn't die in the initial volley were killed as they ran, when Spear came around in a tight loop to strafe them off the line of the wall. Threads of sinew and knots of transformed tissue flared out behind the killer's head in a fan. Fronds from the demon skin fluttered, sucking the mist of blood from the air as the bike passed over the wall and skimmed the runway towards the parked shuttle. The Uritash ship was untouched, although Spear noted two corpses off by the prow. The autonomic guns in the shuttle's chin barbette had locked onto the pair of opportunists, who had clearly thought they could claim the craft to escape. The little turret turned to track the jet bike. A Spear came in, but it did not fire. The sensors saw nothing when they looked at him, only a jumble of conflicting readings the primitive machine brain could not decipher. He abandoned the flyer and sprinted towards the shuttle. Spear was electric. His every neuron sang with bubbling power and giddy anticipation. The tiny droplet of blood he had consumed was like the sweetest nectar. It bubbled through his consciousness like potent, heady wine. He had a flash of Yosef Sabrat's memory, a sense taste of drinking an elderly vintage with Daig Segan, savouring the perfection of it. This was a far greater experience. He had dared to sip from the cup of a being more powerful than any other, and even that slightest of tastes made him feel like the king of all creation. If this were an echo of it, he thought, what glory the Emperor must feel to simply be. Spear released a deep, booming laugh to the clouded skies. He was a loaded gun now, infinitely lethal, ready to commit the greatest murder in history. He just needed to be close. Under the starboard wing, he glimpsed a small drum-shaped vehicle on fat tires. It was a mechanized fuel bowser, governed by a simple automata. The device was one of many such systems in the starport, machines that could do the jobs of men by loading, unloading, or servicing the ships that passed through the facility. But like so many things on Dagonet, in the disorder that had engulfed the planet, no one had thought to stand down the robots, and so they went on at their programmed tasks, ignorant of the fact that buildings had collapsed around them, unaware that their human masters were most likely dead in the rubble. The automaton had dutifully done its job and refueled the shuttle with fresh promethium. Spear hesitated on the cockpit ladder, and his ebullient mood wavered. Overhead, red light and thunder rolled in across the runway from the burning city, and Spear's fanged mouth twisted in something like a scowl. In truth, he had not expected the Sons of Horus to be so close behind him to Dagonet. He had hoped he might have a day, perhaps two, but the tides of the warp were capricious. He wondered if some intelligence had been at work to bring all these players to the same place at the same time. To what end, though? Spear shook the thought away. He was so set on leaving this place behind, he had not stopped to think that his means of escape might no longer be in place. It was likely that if the War Master's fleet was here, then the cutter Yelene was either in their possession or smashed to fragments.
I must get to Terra.
He said the words aloud, the need burning in him. And then he sensed a distant taint upon his perception, a powerful, sinister presence, unbidden. Spear looked up again into the storm.
Yes. The Master was up there,
looking down on Dagonet, searching for him. The killer could see the dark, piercing gaze of Erebus in the patterns of the clouds. The Master was waiting for him, watching to see what he would do next, like a patient teacher with a prized student. Spear dropped off the ladder and moved back to the front of the shuttle. It was all falling into place. With the blood taken, he needed only to ride to his target and perform his kill. Erebus was here to help him. The Master would give him the ship he needed. It would be his final act as a mentor. The killer took one of the bodies on the runway and dragged it into the lee of the wing, under cover from the thick gobbets of black rain that were falling. Spear remembered the rituals of communication that Erebus had seared into his memory. It would only take a moment to arrange. He dipped his fingers into a deep wound on the man's torso and cupped a handful of thickening blood. Then, quickly, Spear used it to draw glyphs of statement on the cracked ferrocrete surface. He made the circles and crosses, building the shape of an eightfold star line by line. Once complete, it would be visible to Erebus like a flare on a moonless night. The Master would see it and know. He would understand. The wind changed direction for an instant, blowing the smell of the corpse and the tang of promethium across the sensing pits in Spear's fanged maw, and, too, it brought him the skirl of humming turbines. His head snapped up, catching sight of a white and green shape dropping down through the mist. Something flashed in the open hatch, and Spear jerked away on reflex. A bullet creased the surface of his demon flesh face like a razor blade, opening a ragged gouge that spat out a fan of ebon fluid. The tainted blood spattered over the half-drawn glyphs, ruining the pattern. Spear stumbled. A fraction of a second slower, and the bullet would have struck him between the fathomless black pits of his eyes. Tightening the muscles in his arms, Spear put up his palms with a snap of the wrist, and the demon flesh grew new orifices. Long spars of sharp bone clattered into the air in a puff of pinkish discharge.
"Watch out!"
Tariel called, stabbing at controls to throw the flyer into a half-roll that showed the belly of the aircraft to their target. Kell staggered, losing his balance for a second as he clung on to his rifle. Coyne, surprisingly strong for wearing a body that seemed insubstantial, grabbed him and held him up. Nearby, Solm hung on for dear life, shivering in the cold draft billowing through the open hatch. Bone shards peppered the hull of the flyer and punched through the metal fuselage. Kell flinched as several impacted his chest and buried themselves in the armor there. Coyne cried out, and as the aircraft righted itself, the Calidus fell backwards, a circle of bright crimson blossoming through the material across the Shade's thigh. Kell swept a hand over his chest, flicking the shards away. As they fell to the deck, they denatured, becoming soft and pliant. To the Vindicare's disgust, the shards began to writhe like blind worms. He stamped them into patches of white pus and brought the Exitus up to his shoulder.
Tauriel, bring us around!
The flyer had come in upwind, their approach masked by the clouds and the thunder from the shelling of the capital. Now they were circling the parked shuttle, the livery of the Eurotas Consortium clear as day across the hull. What Kell saw through his targeting scope was disturbing. He had faced humans of every stripe, mutant creatures, even Xenos. Spear was unlike any of them. Even from this distance, it exuded a tainted menace that sickened him to look at.
"It's making for the cockpit!"
Tauriel called out.
"Kell!"
The marksman saw the blur of the assassin creature as it ran. The thing hazed the air around it like waves of heat rising from a searing desert, making it hard to draw a bead. His finger tensed on the trigger. There was a high-velocity splinter round in the chamber. On impact with an organic target, it would fracture into millions of tiny hair-like fragments, each a charged piece of moly wire. The wires would expand in a sphere and rip through flesh and bone like a tornado of blades. It would do this if he hit his target. But Kell had missed with the first shot. Even from a moving platform, through rain, against a partly occluded target, he should have found the mark. The Vindicare made a snap decision and worked the slide of the rifle, ejecting the unspent splinter bullet, in one swift motion thumbing a red-tipped round from a pocket on his arm into the open chamber.
"What are you waiting for?"
Coyne shouted.
"Kill it!"
The breech of the Exitus closed on the Ignis bullet, and Kell swung the long rifle away from the target. He ignored Coyne's cries, and his scope filled with the shape of the fuel bowser. The incendiary compound in his next shot hit the main promethium tank and combusted. A fist of orange fire flipped the shuttle over and engulfed it in flames. Shockwaves of damp air struck the flyer, and the aircraft was forced down hard, the impact of the landing snapping off the undercarriage. Kell got up as bits of hull metal clattered out of the sky, bouncing off the runway. For a moment, all he saw was the jumping, twisting shapes of the flames. But then, something red and smoking tore itself out of the wreckage and began to run for the starport terminal building. The Vindicare snarled and raised the rifle, but the weight of the gun told him the magazine was empty. He swore, slamming a new clip into place, knowing as he did that it would not matter. When he peered back through the scope, Spear had vanished.
"He's gone for cover,"
he began, turning.
"We need to..."
"Aristide."
His sister's voice stopped him dead. She lay on the deck, and her face was waxy and dull. There was blood on her lips, and when she moved her hands, he saw a jagged length of bone protruding from her chest. He let the rifle fall and ran to her, dropping into a crouch. Old emotions, strong and long buried, erupted inside him.
"Jenica, no."
"Did you kill it?"
He felt the color drain from him.
"Not yet."
"You must, but not out of fury. Do you understand?"
The cold, familiar rage that had always sustained him welled up in Kell's thoughts. It was the same burning, icy power that had spurred him on ever since that day in the Scola, since the moment the woman in the Vindicare robes had told him they knew the name of the man who had killed his parents. It was his undying fuel, the bottomless wellspring of dark emotion that made him such a superlative killer. His sister's fingertips touched his cheek.
"No,"
she said, her eyes brimming with tears.
"Please don't show me that face again."
not the revenge. There is no end to that, Aristide. It goes on and on and on, and it will consume you. There will be nothing left.
Kell felt hollow inside, an empty vessel.
There's nothing now, he said. You took it all when you broke away. The last connection I had.
He looked down at his hands.
This is all I have left.
Jenica shook her head.
You're wrong. And so was I. I let you go that night. I should have made you stay. We could have lived another life. Instead, we doomed ourselves.
She was fading now, and he could see it. A surge of raw panic washed over him. His sister was going to die, and there was nothing he could do to stop it.
Listen to me, she said. He is watching. The God Emperor waits for me.
I don't... Hush.
She put her finger on his lips, trembling with her agony.
One day...
Jenica pressed something into his palm and closed his fingers over it.
Save his life, Aristide. He will draw me to his right hand, to be with mother and father. I'll wait for you there. We will wait for you.
Jenica.
He tried to find the right words to say to her, to ask her to forgive him, to understand. But her eyes were all the answer he needed. He saw such certainty there, such absence of doubt. With difficulty, she pulled a slim toxin cord from her pocket.
Do this, my brother,
she told him, her pain rising.
But not for revenge. For the God Emperor.
Before he could stop her, she touched the tip of the needle-like weapon to her palm and pierced the flesh. Kell cried out as her eyes fluttered closed, and she became slack in his hands. The reins drummed on the canopy, and the flames hissed. Then he became aware of a presence at his side. Coyne stood there, holding his long rifle.
Vindicare, said the shade.
What are your orders?
Kell opened his fingers and saw a gold aquila there, stained with dots of red.
In the Emperor's name,
he said, rising to his feet and taking the weapon.
Follow me.